So he looked instead at the fire while she told him, because her husband was not there for the telling. Mr. Garner was dead, and his wife had a lump in her neck the size of a sweet potato and unable to speak to anyone. She leaned as close to the fire as her pregnant belly allowed and told him, Paul D., the last of the Sweet Home men. There had been six of them who belonged to the farm, Setha the only female. Mrs. Garner, crying like a baby, had sold his brother to pay off the debts that surfaced the minute she was widowed. Then school teacher arrived to put things in order. But what he did broke three more Sweet Home men and punched the glittering iron out of Setha's eyes, leaving two open wells that did not reflect firelight. Now the iron was back, but the face, softened by hair, made him trust her enough to step inside her door, smack into a pool of pulsing red light. She was right. It was sad. Walking through it, a wave of grief soaked him so thoroughly he wanted to cry. It seemed a long way to the normal light surrounding the table, but he made it, dry-eyed and lucky. You said she died soft. Soft as cream, he reminded her. That's not Baby Suggs, she said. Who then? My daughter. The one I sent ahead with the boys. She didn't live? No. The one I was carrying when I ran away is all I got left. Boys gone, too. Both of them walked off just before Baby Suggs died. Paul D. looked at the spot where the grief had soaked him. The red was gone, but a kind of weeping clung to the air where it had been. Probably best, he thought. If a Negro got legs, he ought to use them. Sit down too long, somebody will figure out a way to tie him up. Still, if her boys were gone, no man? You here by yourself? Me in Denver, she said. That all right by you? That's all right by me. She saw his skepticism and went on. I cook at a restaurant in town, and I sew a little on the sly. Paul D. smiled then, remembering the bedding dress. Setha was 13 when she came to Sweet Home and already iron-eyed. She was a timely present for Mrs. Garner, who had lost Baby Suggs to her husband's high principles. The five Sweet Home men looked at the new girl and decided to let her be. They were young and so sick with the absence of women they had taken to calves. Yet they let the iron-eyed girl be, so she could choose, in spite of the fact that each one would have beaten the others to mush to have her. It took her a year to choose, a long, tough year of thrashing on pallets, eaten up with dreams of her. A year of yearning, when rape seemed the solitary gift of life. The restraint they had exercised, possible only because they were Sweet Home men, the ones Mr. Garner bragged about, while other farmers shook their heads in warning at the phrase. Y'all got boys, he told them. Young boys, old boys, picky boys, stropping boys. Now at Sweet Home, my niggers is men, every one of them. Bought them that away, raised them that away. Men, everyone. Beg to differ, Garner. Ain't no nigger men. Not if you scared, they ain't. Garner's smile was wide. But if you a man yourself, you want your niggers to be men, too. I wouldn't have no nigger men round my wife. It was the reaction Garner loved and waited for. Neither would I, he said. Neither would I. And there was always a pause before the neighbor or stranger or peddler or brother-in-law, whoever it was, got the meaning. Then a fierce argument, sometimes a fight, and Garner came home bruised and pleased, having demonstrated one more time what a real Kentuckian was, one tough enough and smart enough to make and call his own niggers men. And so they were. Paul D. Garner, Paul F. Garner, Paul A. Garner, Hallie Suggs, and Sixo, the Wild Man.